I think it's hard to make any change while one is in a fight or flight state. And unless we think about it, unless we pay attention to it, we will never really know if we're in a fight or flight state, because we're so conditioned to being in that state of kind of heightened awareness and that, you know, wired state 90% of the time.
Hello and welcome to Life Intended. I'm your host, Kelly Berry. Life Intended is a podcast that explores what it means to be true to yourself and live an authentic and purposeful life. Each episode explores my guest's version of personal growth, self-discovery, and the pursuit of becoming the best version of themselves, as well as how to find joy in the journey. Today, I'm speaking with my friend Sadie Wackett. Sadie is originally from the UK and moved to the US 8 years ago. She grew up in England with her parents and three siblings. She studied at university in the UK as well as in France, and has a degree in French and European history and a master's in HR management. Sadie has worked in corporate life for 20 years, holding C-suite and executive leadership roles. And today, Sadie is a chief human resources officer for a global company. Sadie won't tell you this, but she's a pretty big deal. She has worked in HR in global businesses for most of her career and has had the privilege of working and traveling all over the globe. Sadie is married and has one daughter who's almost 7, and they have a dog named Pickles. She's also a certified executive leadership and life coach, and she has a huge passion for working with women who find themselves stuck for some reason. She has run a women's coaching circle for the past 2 years, which I've had the privilege of being a part of. For the past 15 years, Sadie has consciously built a practice and skill set for personal growth. This journey has enabled her to untangle the threads that were tying her to an unfulfilled life. It hasn't meant quitting her corporate job, but it has allowed her to make choices based on complete alignment with her true self, her passion, her purpose, and her capacity to create a life that she truly wants. Through her own experiences, challenges, and growth, she has established a passion for helping others transform their lives. Sadie's three core values are well-being, conscious growth and discovery, and sincere connection. She loves diving deep into topics of interest, being with people in meaningful ways, baking, being active, and spending time outside. Sadie is a friend of mine, and I can't wait to let her tell you her story and share her insights. Every time I talk with Sadie, I leave feeling both deeply understood and also gently challenged. She is a beautiful and insightful human with so much wisdom to share, and I can't wait for you all to hear from her. Welcome, Sadie. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Kelly. What a lovely, beautiful introduction. Yeah, it's great to hear. Thank you.
Anything else? I know, you know, you've accomplished a lot, you've done a lot. Anything else that you want to let everybody know about you?
No, I think you covered the high points. I think there's obviously a lot more to the journey, but maybe some of that will come out along the way.
Yeah, it definitely will. So, you know, speaking of your journey, tell us more about what I just described, what that has looked like, and how you have evolved in life to be where you are now.
Wow, that's a big question. All right. So starting from, you mentioned, you know, my early years. So I grew up, I'm from England. I grew up as one of four siblings. Mum and dad both worked. Dad traveled quite a bit. My mum was a teacher of special needs kids. And so I would say early life was very busy and there wasn't a lot of time. As a kid, even though I had three siblings, I think what I've reflected on, what I've had chance to reflect on since I've grown up, is it was tough. I was kind of introverted. I was, I think, always someone that was looking for the meaning in things and found it difficult to understand why things were the way they were. I was always looking for, you know, more meaning, more purpose. And generally, I think I was, even through until my kind of adolescent years of, there's part of me was kind of lost and almost like something was wired a little differently in me. And, you know, that manifested through friendships, through relationships. And I maybe wasn't into the same things that other kids were into. And so there was a lot of great stuff about my childhood. But I think what I'm trying to point out here is that the way I was wired, or the way that I was, I think, perceived to others, i.e. my parents, as kind of problematic. I was the one that was never really easy. I was complicated. And so that was kind of a message that stuck with me, and it didn't go away. So as I grew up, I think that that manifested in certain ways. And that was really, you know, people pleasing, trying to be the best at everything, really resisting any kind of failure and having to kind of conform to norms, especially in university, especially in work when I first started working. And, you know, I think to make a pretty long and complicated story relatively short, it did lead to quite a lot of dysfunction in my life. So when I got to the age of around 30, it had started to really become quite destructive to me. And it took actually my mom, someone in my family, to notice it and say, you know, we need to kind of get you some help. And so that was when I think that was really the first moment that I had ever realized, or anyone had actually ever realized, that my mental health was really at risk. And so it started then. I'd say my kind of real growth journey, that was probably an inflection point, because I then, you know, I went to see medical professionals and they referred me to therapy, specifically cognitive behavioral therapy. And I went, that, you know, that was, not only was that helpful for me at the dealing with the issues I was dealing with at the time, which was anorexia, but it was so powerful, the way in which I felt it gave me this incredibly insightful look into myself. It really just felt like it started to answer so many questions for me that had been sort of swirling around in my, not just in my head, but in my body for years and years. You know, that began my journey, if you like, of self-discovery. But it really was the foundation. And so at the same time, while I was going through therapy, I started to become really interested in Buddhism and Buddhist practices. I read a lot. And really bizarrely, I think, you know, sometimes the universe does things to us, knowing where we are at the time. But I realized, I found there was a monastery near to where I lived. I'd never known it before, and I'd lived there for 30 odd years. And I found it, and I was able to go and every week meditate with monks. And I think back to that at the time, and I didn't perhaps appreciate it, but that was, I mean, it was not only developmental, it was spiritual. And so there's this connection that I started to weave at that point between kind of self-discovery and this sense of spirituality. So I'm not religious. We didn't grow up in a religious family. And so that was always something that, you know, this connection to something that I was trying to identify. And it really started to grow at that point. And then that led me very quickly into exploring mindfulness. So I did my mindfulness practitioner certification, and I practiced it, you know, pretty religiously for every single day. I found that very helpful. And that then, I think, if anyone is a practitioner of mindfulness or meditation or anything like that, it isn't for everyone. It ebbs and flows in my life, that's for sure. But it did set quite a good foundation for me, and it helped kind of balance something within me that was tumultuous before. So I'm not saying by any means that this is the path that people need to go down. You know, meditation really isn't for everyone. It would just happen to be the thing for me at that time that was very balancing and very kind of recalibrating for what was going on for me. So this, you know, all at the same time, I'm working in my kind of corporate job. I'm dealing with, you know, I would say some really complex, not necessarily technically complex issues, but complex issues in an environment, in a corporate environment, really around relationships, around being a woman in a very male dominated environment, being in a position where I had very little support, all of that. And so it really supported me through that time. And it just took me, you know, from then throughout every stage of my life. And I've had some big transitions. So I have had some big career transitions, but I've also relocated to the US, which was a big adjustment for me. You know, that came with a lot of loneliness, you know, isolation, big change in culture, different value sets, all of those things. So I've really tried to maintain the continuity there. And I think trying to juggle all these big transitions, it's always been something I've come back to, and it's gone from there. So I've made sure I make self-reflection a regular practice. I've been on some immersive retreats, like silent retreats and retreats designed to sort of reset your nervous system. Most recently, I've explored transcendental meditation, which is, you know, just another, it's not necessarily different, but it's just another practice that helps. And I think through all of it, I've made sure that I've always had a coach or a therapist or somebody who's been my opportunity to process things through. And so those transitions I talked about, whether it was becoming a mom, whether it was transitions at work or just through relationships, it's been pretty significant. And the only way I know to, you know, I'd say thrive, but in some cases it's just survive through it, is by turning that look inwards and really exploring, you know, who I am, what's going on, what beliefs I'm holding, what choices I have, and, you know, trying to make sure my nervous system is well calibrated to you know, to take some of the decisions that I have to take in life. So sorry, that was a lot. I'm going to pause there and see where you want to go next.
Thank you for sharing all of that. What I love about you is that you just have this belief that there are different tools that can help in different circumstances. And, you know, I can see that through your story that, you know, you have never really like chosen a way to, whether it be like to handle stress or become more self-aware. You are a sponge and want to learn all the ways so that when you have different situations, you have the right tool at the right time to use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's amazing. I think that we could probably have a podcast on each of those because you're so knowledgeable about all of them. But one thing, you know, you talk about self-awareness and, you know, you and I have also talked about this system that you operate in and understanding that. So I think that's probably something that a lot of people aren't aware of or don't know a lot about. So can you speak to what that means and how figuring that out is helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the one thing I wanted to just mention, then I'll answer that question, is that I'm not, like, by no means am I practicing all these approaches all the time. And and I think, for one, it becomes very telling when one finds oneself in a position of, I would call it a transition, you know, whether you've got a big decision to make or something, you're grappling with something, that it's very easy to become overwhelmed with feelings, you know, overwhelmed with stress, overwhelmed with anxiety, just overwhelmed. And it's very difficult at that point to pull yourself out of that and say, oh, I know, I need to, you know, do more mindfulness or journal about my inner critic or my internal beliefs. It's really, really hard. So I don't, it's good to have the tools, but I think it's having the tools and being able to apply them in a way which is supported. So, and sometimes it's, you know, it's not easy to do that alone. But to talk to your point around the system, I think that this was an aha for me at one point, because I could geek out on myself. I think I've got to the point now where I'm constantly trying to understand why did I react like that? And why do I feel so frustrated by this? Or why am I grappling with this decision so much? So I could like write a thesis on myself. But the reality is that the reaction I have to a given situation, to a trigger, if we want to call it that, is very dependent on, you know, not only understanding my own values and what I believe and what is important to me, but it's how that operates within the system around you. So whether that's in work, you know, for example, you're working with people that have a very different value set, and how that shapes yours and how that triggers yours and how that manifests in that particular environment. I guess, you know, we're not a paper doll. We're not two-dimensional. The way I look at us now, where I am now, is we're like more like a Rubik's cube, and our values are in there somewhere, but they might look red depending on, you know, if it's in the context of me and my daughter, or they might look, you know, orange if they're in the context of me and my husband, or they might look green if they're in the context of me and my work colleagues. So I think the key for me, or the kind of the aha I had, was it's important for me to be cognizant and aware and very kind of respectful of my own values and my own kind of boundaries. But how that looks will differ slightly depending on the, I call it the system we're operating in, but the relationships we hold with other people. Because like anything, it's like the weather, it's going to impact, you know, what that looks like, the flavor of that. And I just think that's helpful to keep in mind, because it also means that if I hold a particular value around something and say that is personal growth and fulfillment and, you know, being the best I can be, and the other person is, their core value is around maintaining stability, security and status quo, and that's it's important to them, then, you know, for us two to meet together in a kind of a productive way, we've got to find something that we do connect on. But having that awareness, not only of me, but of what's the other person experiencing at this point, that's the dance. That's the kind of, yeah, the dance that we need to do together. And that's difficult, because you might be a highly self-aware person, but the other person may not be. So I think that's just it leads me on to another thought, actually. I would like to mention this, because this is something I'm really also quite passionate about, is, you know, when we have expectations of how a particular relationship or result should be, we often don't factor in the other part of that equation. So we factor in our own expectations or our own what success looks like for us in that particular situation, but we don't factor in the variables that are going to impact that. And so I like to think of them, and that causes, you know, that causes stress, that causes anxiety, and it causes, you know, in extreme cases, burnout. And so my, you know, what I've been spending more and more time thinking about now is just lowering the bar. And what I mean by that is, people listening to this may be very familiar with what it feels like to have kind of perfectionist tendencies and want to do the best you can possibly do at all times. But that will often lead, because of things outside your control, to a sense of burnout. And I think the key for me right now, and what I'm kind of focusing on, this is the piece for me that I'm trying to really embody, is lowering that bar. And what does that look like? Because even though I think I've lowered it, I'm still trying to be the best at that, or try and achieve that. But really accepting that it doesn't have to be the way I think it might need to be. So there's more in that as well, but I wanted to just, I felt like it carried on from the previous comment I made.
Yeah, that's all so good. I think, you know, one thought I was having while you were talking about, you know, the system that you operate in, something that I've always, you know, kept in mind, and we being like my husband and I and our coaching business, is like group dynamics. And how, you know, every time you add a person to a situation, a group dynamic changes, and mm-hmm. that system changes, and you have to figure out, you know, what that looks like. And that can be on a family level, that can be on a work level, that can be on a friend level.
Absolutely.
And I think those types of shifts happen all the time, and that people, they're not really aware that that is going on. And that, you know, if you are a family of four, you know, you and your husband are a group, and then you and your husband and your two children are a group, and, you know, the mom and daughter, for example, are a group. And, you know, every time the dynamic changes within those groups, the whole situation changes, like the beliefs, the values, even to a point, like the expectations. And, you know, I just think that those are things, like, you, once you're aware of them, and you're aware of that, like, constantly changing dynamic, every, you know, in every situation that you have, basically, you can better think about, you know, like, you know, how should we operate in this situation? Or, I don't know, there's a bazillion examples that you can use, like your parenting style might change based on the different groups that you're in. You know, the way you behave with your friends might change based on the group. So the way that you make decisions might change based on that dynamic at work. But it's,
I think you've
I was thinking about that a lot as you were talking about that.
Because I think we don't, you know, generally as human, we don't pay attention to that. So something happens in the environment, and we we find ourselves reacting to it in some way. And it could be, you know, frustration, it could be anger, it could be joy, you know, it can be all sorts of responses, but we don't, it's something that occurs, but we're not, you know, we're not necessarily aware of the energies that have caused it to occur. And so we can live with it then without even acknowledging it. And so, you know, I think marriage is a great example of where we don't have these conversations every day. And so something happens, a big mm-hmm. decision, maybe it's about relocating to another country, or maybe less big than that, or it's taking another job and having another kid or not having a kid. There's so many big crunch decisions that can occur in that relationship. And, you know, it's likely that it could happen that, you're not on the same page at all times about those big things. And it can lead easily to gripes and resentment and festering resentment as well. And I'm not saying that's easy to change. I'm just saying it's more easy to understand and perhaps accept when there's a level of awareness around why. Well, it's because, I don't know, mm-hmm. ultimately our value sets might be quite different, or I have an expectation that this person can do that, and the reality is they can't do that. So, yeah, acceptance, well, awareness and then acceptance are, you know, easy to say. I get it, easy to say, but it comes with, honestly, it comes with a real commitment to be curious. I think that's the way I've learned anyway, of just the more curious I've been about why I'm feeling unhappy, you know, to just use that big umbrella term, why is this making me unhappy? You know, continuing to ask that question leads me to answers, leads me to some resolve, and leads me actually to be aware of what I have the ability to change and what I don't. That's quite, you know, that's helpful, and it's quite liberating, because you recognize that there is actually way more that you can influence than you might think. And that's where, you know, as I work with women, I want mm-hmm. women to feel empowered. I want women to feel like they have agency to make changes. And I'm not talking, you know, quit my job type big changes, but I'm talking about small changes every day that in and of themselves gives you a huge sense of a much higher sense of control and agency over any given situation.
Yeah. So what are some strategies that you coach women, that you use to coach women on how to, I guess, cultivate more agency or even more like self-awareness?
Awareness, yeah.
To be able to make those changes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, so the first thing I'd say, again, a learning for me, is that I think it's hard to make any change while one is in a fight or flight state. And unless we pay attention to it, we will never really know if we're in a fight or flight state, because we're so conditioned to being in that state of kind of heightened awareness and that, you know, wired state, you know, 90% of the time. So the first thing I would do, and I'm saying this, I would do it to myself, I would help other women do this, is to do things that are going to just calm your nervous system. And so bring yourself from that fight or flight into a state of, you know, rest and digest. And it's that's the way that you can access the more creative and the more creative and inspired ways of thinking. Otherwise, you're just, it kind of limits your ability to problem solve, to solution. So that would be, mm-hmm. I mean, on a very basic level, that would be breathing. That would be literally, if you can do nothing else, it would be taking slow and steady deep breaths and exhaling slowly, because that sends a message to our brain that we're safe. And so that just naturally calms you. And there are other things, you know, you can taking 5 or 10 minutes to do some mindful breathing or mindful walking outside, being, you know, very bringing yourself to the present moment will stop all the scurry of thoughts in and out of your mind. So I think that's the first thing. Then I would probably work with people on exploring beliefs and assumptions. So really having people think about, you know, two sets of beliefs that you might hold. So one is, what beliefs do you have about yourself today that are limiting, that are disempowering? And we would take time and just write those out together. And it doesn't matter how many there are or how extreme they are. That's important to get that out kind of on paper. And then after you've done that, what are the beliefs you have about yourself that are really empowering? What are people, you know, this isn't a practice we're accustomed to doing regularly. We don't stop and think. And the purpose of that is to really just shine a light on the areas that are, you might not even know about it, holding you back. And that's about bringing things just to your conscious awareness. So, I've got this belief that I'm really bad with money and I'm never going to earn any money. I'm using that as an example. Where does that belief come? Like, whose voice is that that's telling you that? Where does that, it comes from somewhere. And it's not your fault. You've got it, but let's acknowledge it. Can we reframe it? Is there another way that we can think about that belief that's going to be more helpful to you? The other is, you know, just recognizing the triggers. So what happens in your life? When do you react? When do you find there's things that happen, situations that occur that generate a response in you? And what is that response? So it could be, you know, call it a fear-based response, anger, frustration, worry, or it actually could be a, you know, more of a love-based response. It triggers a feeling of joy, of sensuality, or, you know, other things. It's good just to notice those, to begin to document and notice. Like, so what you would do at the end of every day, you just take 5 minutes and you think of situations throughout the day that triggered you one way or another. And what was it? And how did you feel? And there is I think part of this is getting comfortable with the language of emotions. So that's probably another podcast session for you. But I feel now like I've got a dictionary of emotions, how I feel, what that means. But it's not common, you know, we don't sit and analyze our emotions very frequently. So we don't really know, is what I'm feeling anger or is it sadness? Is it loneliness? And being like, that's the exercise here, to really just get familiar so you can narrow it down. And if it is loneliness, then, you know, what's that? What am I missing? What's lacking in my life? You can start to uncover the kind of the root cause of some of these things, which helps you. It's liberating because it helps you realize where it's coming from. So there's that. I mean, there's a bazillion other sort of exercises I could walk you through, but those are some of the main ones. And, you know, it's possible to do these things by yourself, but I think it is most helpful when you have somebody asking you and probing you and coaxing you to uncover what's a layer beneath, or what's a layer beneath that, and what's a layer beneath that, because that's when the ahas really start to happen. And so, you know, that might be your therapist, it might be a coach, you know, I guess I'd say it doesn't really matter. What does matter is that you have somebody who is qualified. Sphere of life coaching is, you know, there's a lot of people that do it. And I think, you know, I take my responsibility incredibly seriously, because I think it, you know, people, if not in the right hands, it can create some harm. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could talk about, you know, identifying our core values, our core passions, and our purpose. That's another great one to help us feel like we're getting a sense of alignment in our life with what we're doing and where we're headed, rather than just feeling at sea and sort of disconnected. So yeah, there's a lot, and I'm, you know, it's a very full field now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot out there, which is great. I think my takeaway is that I've been able to get where I am now through not only a personal curiosity, but having some really good mentors and coaches along the way. And, you know, I'll share that at the moment, I'm at a point in my life where I'm grappling with an incredibly big decision. And I am applying all of these practices through the help of others as well. It's not something I can resolve by myself. And actually, you know, we're creatures who need connection. We need community. We need others. We are not, as I said before, we're not paper dolls. We need, how we show up in the world is dependent on who we're with. So finding that support network and the right people to help you through that, I think is vital.
Yeah, so important. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in all of the things that you just said. And I definitely want to touch on core values because I think that's incredibly important. But two things that you talked about that I'd like to just ask some questions about are the identifying the beliefs that you have and also identifying triggers that cause, you know, different responses. So I think beliefs are just incredibly powerful, both negatively and positively. It's something I've worked on in myself for a long time. I've carried a significant number of limiting beliefs and, you know, beliefs that were not helping me live the life that I wanted to live. And, you know, I think like all of this, we're works in progress. It's not like you're going to identify a belief and then all of a sudden change it. So what do you do or how do you coach people who just are having a very hard time letting go of beliefs, especially ones that probably are not true or are not helpful?
No, it's a great question because, I mean, these are so deep rooted from early childhood that trying to think that we can just change them by identifying them is, you know, the first thing is identifying them and calling them out and bringing them to awareness. The next bit and the hard bit is how do I reframe them in a consistent way? And, you know, again, I would go back to expectations. Maybe that will never really happen. But what might happen is you you catch it. You catch it in the moment and you can choose then how to consider it. And, you know, I know people use this a lot, this analogy a lot with coaching, but or change, personal change in any kind of respect. But it is kind of like going to the gym. If you keep going, if you keep practicing, if you have a practice, you know, and maybe it could be any one of those that I've just mentioned, journaling, mindfulness, what have you, or other reflective practices, it will help you to revisit what happened and take another, make another choice about that belief. And the speed at which you will get back to I'm okay will be much quicker than it probably would have been previously. So it's about commitment and habit, like creating the habits to continue to do this. Unlike the gym analogy, I think the older we get or the more we age, I think the stronger we become, the richer we become, the more knowledge and the more awareness and the wiser we become. So, you know, physically our bodies might deplete and going to the gym is important to keep, you know, muscles, you know, strong. But this, I think, is an opportunity where if we continue to do the exercises, do the activities and build them into our daily living, it will be amazing, the strength and resilience and self-security that one can develop with this. So, you know, I don't think there's a there's no silver bullet, there's no magic wand. It's just practice and it's catching. It's just when these, you know, speaking to the triggers, it's when you're triggered that those things will come up and it'll be catching them in the moment and thinking, you know, is there an alternative way I can frame this? And the more we do that, the more we believe that.
Yeah. So just sharing personally, you know, that's something I've worked on. And I think sometimes I do really well and sometimes I do very poorly. And I think that, you know, as a, well, I'll say like a recovering perfectionist or something like that, I can get really down on myself when I let those beliefs come back in, or I have worked on how I respond to a trigger and I feel like I get back to square one and I can really just, you know, like beat myself up that I haven't made any progress. I'm no further along than I was when I started. And, you know, I'm never going to, you know, all of the words that you shouldn't use, like I'll never be any different, or I'll never be able to respond better or whatever. So I do think, to your point, you know, like daily practice, making these things a part of how you think about yourself, how you think about your life, how you think about your world is so good, because every time you do one of these things, it helps you become more confident and it inspires you to continue to apply them because you can feel the difference that they make immediately.
Can I ask
just
you
kind of sharing like,
yeah, can I ask
it you, isn't something that you just get to, yeah,
check off. No, I was curious. I was going to ask you, you've been really open in sharing that. So what practices have you applied? Like when you do get those beliefs coming up, what have you found helps?
Similar to what you have said, like I have to find a way to calm my central nervous system because I tend to be like a very, I physically react to the triggers. And what happens is I can't think. So something will trigger me and I will have what I would describe is some combination of panic and amnesia. So if this happens in a conversation and I'm triggered in a certain way, I can no longer follow the conversation. I can't really remember what was said. You know, it's like a something is going on in my brain and it's the fight or flight or the panic or something. So I have to in the moment, I have to stop. Sometimes I have to take a step back. I have to breathe, but I have to do something physically that helps me gain control of my brain again. Because you can't really be productive in a conversation that you can't remember what's being said or you panic and you basically can't respond. So breathing, removing myself from the situation, trying to step back far enough so that I can piece together what's been going on to get to that point again. And sometimes it's been just if it's a conversation or a situation, asking the other person to okay, can we start over? Let's take a step back and let's start this over. Let me try to absorb it from a different place and see if I can really just gain control of my thoughts and my feelings and my actions again and be a productive participant.
Yeah. And you mentioned something. Sort of beating yourself up or using all the words, I should have done this or I must do that or I'll never be this. I think it's a helpful prompt because there is this element of self-compassion that I think if, whatever we're talking about here, whether it's developing greater self-awareness or being able to, manage long-held, deeply rooted beliefs, know that it always needs to be taken within this kind of envelope of compassion for yourself because you are human and you will have these beliefs and you will be fallible and you will make mistakes and you won't be perfect. And, this, I think it's a really core theme, perhaps another topic for another podcast, but the importance of self-compassion is something women especially and how we are raised and the expectations just generally that we have to live to in society and even within within women groups we don't offer ourselves a lot of compassion and we could do so much good for ourselves and each other if we can start to consider ourselves and use a language that is gentler, kinder, safer, more compassionate to ourselves. And that is, if you think about speaking to a friend and how you would speak to a friend versus how you speak to yourself, it's always a good analogy. Would I actually say that to a friend of mine? No. Then why on earth am I saying it to myself? I deserve more. And we are, we're conditioned to not allow ourselves to feel like we're deserving. So I just wanted to say that because that's a message I'd love to send out to the world about the importance of self-compassion.
Yeah. I think there's an element too, I think we are just exposed to so much these days. It's like as humans and as creatures, we're not built to operate in the life that we're in right now. We're not built to operate with the constant bombardment of information, with the global news cycle. We just aren't meant to be able to handle and process and live with just the amount of information that we get. And so I think, want to that your self-compassion part of that, just being kinder to ourselves and giving ourselves more grace and more space than we probably even think that we need, because mm-hmm. there's just so much going on beyond mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the things that really we're talking about, you know, the things that are right in front of you mm-hmm. all the time. And it's just, it's yeah. We're living in a world that we just weren't made for.
Yeah.
And I don't think that people think about that as much as
yeah. you
know, they should, or
I
that it affects them as much as it does, really.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think we, again, as women, are in a society now. And perhaps it's, you know, perhaps it's been this way for a long time, but perhaps it was rarely spoken about. But the expectations of us to be productive, to be maintaining the status that, you know, we feel we should be maintaining, to be a carer, to be a professional, to be a wife, to be a mother, if you know, to be productive in all of these areas in our life, it's unrealistic, it's unsustainable, and it, you know, we can think that we've got it all buttoned up, but underneath us something's going to be kind of crumbling away. And so, you know, I think even more reason to consider like ourselves through a more compassionate lens and think about some of the expectations we might be putting on ourselves. And when I say about lowering the bar, that we can choose to let go, because there's probably things we can choose to let go of if we really looked inside and said, that's just not important to me anymore, or it's less important than I thought it was. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna take that one at 50% now.
Yeah, I think in addition to all of the things that we just talked about, you know, like comparison is so rampant. Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a part of what you're talking about, like, yeah. you know, feeling like you can't really lower the bar because, you know, that person and that person, over there, like they're doing it all. Look, their life is amazing or perfect, or they seem to have everything under control. So certainly I should be able to also, you know, I think that is just another element that makes lowering the bar or being compassionate or allowing yourself to rest or mm-hmm. even like allowing yourself to realize that you may not even want the same things as that person has,
exactly.
or want to be doing the same things.
Yeah.
So being kind of introspective and noticing who you are and who you want to be and what you want and how that all plays a role in what your life looks like.
And it speaks to, you know, going back kind of full circle to knowing your values and spending the time figuring out what is most important to you. They're kind of like your roots in the ground. So, you know, the storms and the hurricanes and the, you know, the tornadoes, they may come and they may bash you around from side to side, but if your roots are secured deep enough into the ground, you'll still be there. And it's, I think it is so hard when there are people all around you. You know, I'm thinking about the location that we happen to live in as well. It's, you know, there's a lot of wealth, there's a lot that people have. What's become normal is different now than what normal used to be. And adjusting to that is hard. And so, you know, I think it's hard to do it by yourself, to be kind of that resilient and that steadfast in your beliefs by yourself. Being with communities, so with people who share the same outlook and share the same mindset is powerful. That's really, you know, something I've learned as well. And it's not always easy to do unless you're, you know, lucky enough to have a lot of people like that around you. But making choices about, you know, who we spend our time with and who brings out the best in us and who we feel comfortable with and who we don't compare ourselves to. Now, that is another helpful strategy to, you know, to taking some mm-hmm. of that pressure off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the values topic, I was at your house recently and I saw that you all have family values hanging up in the kitchen. I didn't read them. I'm not sure if you you know, if you even know
what they
noticed
are.
That I noticed them. But I did. And I think that's great. You know, we, in my background in business coaching, you know, we identify core values for businesses. Nick and I have core values. So I noticed them because you don't see that a lot in people's personal lives.
Mm.
So did you all create those as a family? Was your daughter involved? How do you all talk about them?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because it came about, and I think this is, as a parent, this is a big deal for me because I want to raise a kid who has strong, solid values and who is proud to own them. And so, yeah, we did come up with them together. It happened because we went through a period of really bad behavior. Honestly, it was a nightmare. And with hindsight now, I can remember we were going through some, you know, transition with her. And so she was reacting to that. But we, you know, it was serious. It was serious enough that I was, neither my husband or I were willing for that to continue. So we sat down and we were like, right, what's important to us as a family? Respect. That's one. Being respectful to other people. I'm trying to remember what they are now, but that was a big one. Kindness was another. And we were just trying to help educate a 5 or 6 year old into just what it means to be a good human being. We don't talk about them all the time, but when the behavior occurs, which it does, we will point to them and we will talk about them again. So it felt like felt like a small thing, but actually I think it's going to shape her as she grows up to remember and understand what's important to us and hopefully becomes important to her and sets her moral compass. And it's a good reminder for me and my husband as well when things get tough.
I love that. Yeah. Well, we're getting to a point where we need to wrap up.
Yep.
So many things that you talked about that I want to go into deeper. So we'll just continue the conversation in the future, but definitely brought, I think, some things that will just hopefully help people stop and think about the tools that they have, the way that they think about things, the way that they approach or even, you know, seek out guidance in their own lives, because I think, you know, one thing you and I have in common is that we believe in coaching and believe that everybody needs a coach, everybody can benefit from a coach, and that truly you're responsible for how you feel, how you live, and it's your responsibility to make sure that you're giving yourself the best opportunity to think and make decisions and live your life truly.
Well,
any parting thoughts you have, or
just to say thank you. I mean, there's a lot I kind of spoke about in this, so it might be a bit sort of disjointed, but hopefully some of the messages came through. And you know, you said it about coaching. I'm a huge believer with the right coach, you can really up level the way you live your life for your own benefit. If anyone's interested in reaching out and having more conversations around coaching, I'm happy to, you know, to pass on details. But thank you. And I will be very happy if there's any particular area that's piqued interest to come and talk again a bit more about that. And well done, Kelly, for doing this. You're great.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I'll include Sadie's contact information in the show notes, but yeah, if any of this resonated with you, I would highly recommend reaching out to Sadie. She's, like I said, you leave every conversation feeling deeply understood and gently challenged. I do love that. Like, always challenged, but in a very, you just listen to Sadie, like in a very gentle way. You leave feeling like, have I been challenged? Like, yeah, she's helping me think about things. So, which,
good,
in my opinion, is, you know, what you want in a friend. So, great.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom.
My pleasure.
Super valuable. And we will definitely talk again.
Okay. Bye, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode. It's truly an honor to help bring these conversations to you. I do have a couple of quick favors to ask of you. While you're listening to an episode, could you take a screenshot and post that to your Instagram stories and tag me at Life Intended Podcast? And just let me know what your favorite takeaways were or what you liked about the episode. It really helps me to learn more about what you love and want to see more of. And if you have a few extra minutes, if you'd go to iTunes or wherever you listen, I'd love it if you could leave me a rating and review. Ratings and reviews are one of the best ways new listeners can find the show, and I'd love nothing more to grow this and help more people live a life intended. See you again here next week.